Okay, moving on to, do you want to do approval of minutes, Matt? Is it because our speaker's not here yet, or?
That sounds great, Lori. And let me check for Lisa from Advanced CT too. So maybe after the minutes, we could go to her.
Okay.
Move approval, Madam Chair, John Coleman.
Approval of minutes for September 27, 2023, seconded by John Coleman. Is, do we have anything else? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Passes. Okay, hold off on staff reports, or Matt, what would you?
So we do want to go to presentations next, Lori. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. I do see Pam Saccato. Pam, is the commissioner and team ready to go? Welcome.
I don't know. I mean, we looked at the agenda. We saw them further on. So, Garrett's on his way back from another meeting. So I'll check in with his office to see if he's in.
Okay, I apologize for the confusion. We moved up the presentations to
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking
in an
at.
effort to accommodate his schedule.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry.
That's
I'm
okay.
probably
That's
going to have
okay.
to.
That's okay. We can work with it.
Okay, I'll touch base.
So I'm gonna call on Advanced CT then next, Pam. Lisa, are you on? Lisa Mercurio.
I haven't seen her, Matt. If you wanna, do you wanna start with Greater Hartford Mobility Study?
Well, I imagine the commissioner would want to speak before that. So why don't we then just plan to go into staff reports, Lori, and we'll make them as quick as possible.
Okay, moving on to staff reports. Matt, do you want to start off, Executive Director?
I will be happy to do that, and Laura is going to put it up on her screen. So while she's doing that, we know obviously that troubled times in the world today, and our hearts are out to everybody impacted by what's going on in Israel and Gaza. But very thrilled to have the opportunity to announce some really good news, and want to congratulate our policy board chair, Mayor Stewart, and her husband Dominic, on the birth of their son. Dominic, and I believe he's going by Nicky, Thomas Mouton. So we're really happy to hear that the mayor and Dominic and Nicky and Big Sister are all doing great. So that is really fabulous news. Congratulations to Mayor Stewart and family. Moving on to the next item. At our next policy board meeting, we're going to have a presentation from United Way of Central and Northeastern Connecticut. And Maura Cook, who is a senior VP at United Way, will lead that presentation. They're going to talk about their ALICE report, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with that data set. It's very, very useful. They're also going to talk about their response to the region's homelessness crisis. Next item, I want to thank you all, everybody who volunteered to serve on our ad hoc legislative committee that will be charged with developing a legislative agenda for the next session of the General Assembly. And the committee will present that agenda to the full board in the January timeframe. I want to thank East Windsor First Selectman Jason Bauza for once again agreeing to lead the legislative committee. We'll plan to hold our first meeting after the November elections.
Matt, do you have enough people to serve on that?
We're pretty close. I am going to try to recruit one to two people from our larger towns, but we did get a very good response. I think approximately 10 people.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori. And I should have said this at the beginning, but our full staff report is loaded online. I am not going to touch on each and every item, and I'm just going to pick a couple from each department. So Next, moving on to our bipartisan infrastructure law update. And Laura, if you can bring it back up on screen when you get a chance. On October 18th, our staff did hold a seminar on EV charging stations, and we had guest presenters from Eversource and the firm of Weston and Sampson. It was very well attended. We had representatives from several of our towns, and we're looking forward to doing those types of sessions again, and just in an effort to provide information to you. There are two other programs I wanted to highlight, and they're both related. The US DOT has announced a EV charger reliability and accessibility accelerator grant. That's a mouthful for sure. And that is specifically, those funds specifically must be used to repair or replace what's called level two or direct current fast charging chargers that are broken or not operational. So not new, but stations that are broken or not operational. So there are 12 of those pieces of equipment within Krog's region that would qualify. And we've got a list on our website for those impacted towns. If you want to apply, we're happy to support you. And then secondly, the Connecticut DOT has just announced its first phase of the National Electrical Vehicle Infrastructure Plan. And they've made $15 million available statewide. And they are focused on deploying what's called direct current fast charging stations along designated corridors. And these are alternative fuel corridors. There are two. There are two within the Krog region. One on I-91 in Hartford near exit 33, and one along I-84 in Willington near exit 71. Other towns can express interest, but really those priority corridors are the priority. And applicants need to first submit a letter of intent or a letter of interest, which is due no later than 5 p.m. on November 9th. So a lot more information on those BIL opportunities available on our website. I am now going to move on to the area of administration and municipal services. Our Capital Region Purchasing Council did have a very productive annual meeting earlier this week in Glastonbury. I was able to attend that. And we have recently issued bids for protective clothing and gear for firefighter and EMT personnel. That bid is going to close on October 25th. Wanted to bring that to your attention. And we are collecting quantities right now for gasoline and traffic guidelines, or also referred to as pavement markings. Next slide, please, Laura. Now, moving on to transportation planning. Really good news here. We do plan in the near future, not later than December, to issue another LOTSIP solicitation. And this one will be, I believe, in the $24 million range. So please look for that. And excited about the fact that we're going to be issuing RFPs for two new regional studies this winter, one related to our regional bicycle pedestrian priority network plan, and another related to warehousing. I know many of our communities have had applications for larger warehouses, and we want to be able to make sure that we're able to provide you with a set of best practices to help you evaluate those applications that are coming in. In the area of public safety, we did provide a regional three-day incident command system training at the 300 level. We are planning a 400 series in early November, and actually we are planning a more expedited and condensed incident command system class for municipal executives for early next year. So we're going to look to send that out to all of you, as well as your newly elected colleagues, so that you can participate in that training. And then last but certainly not least, regional planning and development. We are closing out a five-year grant-funded project known as Active CT in partnership with the Department of Public Health. And unfortunately, we did not get another 5 years of funding under this program. It's very competitive nationwide. Hopefully we will again in this future, But we were able to do a lot of great work under that initiative. For example, we completed a statewide survey on complete streets, and we were in the process of creating a repository, if you will, of complete street plans and policies, bike ped plans, Vision Zero plans and policies, et cetera, that our members can access. We're preparing a grant application for new assessment funds under the Regional Brownfields Program that's due to DECD next month. And we are recruiting, very pleased to announce that we're recruiting our first ever dedicated environmental planning position. That completes my report. Lori, happy to take any questions that you or other policy board members may have. And I would note that the commissioner has joined us for his presentation to the board.
Does anybody have any questions for Matt? I don't see anybody. If not, can we jump into presentations?
Yes, I would recommend we do that next. Laura, if you want to introduce Commissioner Yucalito, and then following our presentations, we could go back to our legislative update.
Yes, if the commissioner would like to start, please.
Absolutely. Morning or afternoon. My name is Garrett Yucalito. I'm the commissioner at the Connecticut Department of Transportation. Thanks for inviting me to join you all today at the policy board. I have a presentation, so I'll share my screen. No matter how many times I do this, I always have to take a minute to remember which one to share. So.
You've got it, Commissioner. Thank you for being here today.
That's sharing the wrong one. There we go. I think, is that good? Okay. Perfect. Okay. So, like I said, my name is Garrett Yucalito, Commissioner at Connecticut Department of Transportation. A few things wanted to talk about today. The first thing is talk about what our priorities are here at CONDOT, some new initiatives and some new programs. Vance. So, what is our vision here at CONDOT? Our focus is really on safety, accessibility, and sustainability. And there's a lot of different meanings for those terms. So I'm gonna look at different ways we can achieve those goals across the state in partnership with our municipal partners. So safety and accessibility go hand in hand. And how can we improve safety? A lot of work has been done already at the municipal level to focus on this, but we recognize that a lot of our state infrastructure is going through your communities. So we need to be partners in improving safety. We also have a lot of infrastructure on the interstate highway system that impacts residents across the state, as well as people passing through our state, that we need to improve safety there. Through our projects that we continue to advance, through our annual capital program, through new design standards that we are going to introduce, we have the ability to improve safety for all users. We have an aging population here in Connecticut, so we need to pay particular attention to how are we designing and building infrastructure for that population that wants to age in place in their homes or move to, to downsize to different locations within their community. And how can we make it for them to be able to have that accessible retirement? So we're looking at crosswalks and sidewalks, ensuring that all of it is ADA accessible. Improving traffic signals with reflective backplates, things like road diets, a funny term to a lot of people not in the public workspace, but it's taking the pavement that is there today and shrinking the footprint of the roadway, either through striping or building out some new curbing. The narrower the widths of the light travel lanes, the slower people are going to travel, which is particularly important through some of our downtowns and village centers, where we want people to go at slower speeds to accommodate the walking infrastructure and patronizing our small businesses. But even when you get outside of village centers, there's things we can be doing to improve safety. So things like looking at center-live marble strips, looking at high-friction surface treatments. So that means on some of those curves on our back roads, putting a treatment on top of the pavement so tires will grip to it when they're going around those curves. And we've partnered with a lot of municipalities on what are called road safety audits. So going into the community, if you have a specific location that you identify as high risk or a need to do some safety improvements, CONDOT staff and some of our consultants will come out and walk that area with you and produce an audit to hand off to you for you to decide, what do I want to proceed with? And we work really closely with CROG on all of these things. And my favorite is a roundabout. It's still controversial and new here in Connecticut. But the phrase that a lot of us in the transportation profession like to use is when in doubt, roundabout, because it's proven to have significant reductions in crashes and major reductions in serious injuries, and it actually reduces transportation emissions from idling vehicles. So it's not just about the vehicles, it's about all users of the system. We see since 2020, I think many people have seen a huge increase in people wanting to walk, to recreate, or to get to their jobs or get to school. Similarly, biking in our communities has exploded. There was a huge uptick in bikes being sold in 2020 and 2021, and that's continued. And people are continuing to use this infrastructure to get around our communities. But it's also public transportation. If you have transit in your community, you want to make sure those transit stops are accessible for all users. So a few months ago, CONDOT's chief engineer and our engineering administrator rolled forward with a complete streets design criteria that it will apply to all state projects. And essentially, it's saying that all of our state projects have to accommodate pedestrian, bike, and transit infrastructure where appropriate. So we're not going to install transit infrastructure if there's no bus service there. But if there is bus service on that road, we need to make sure that that transit infrastructure is accommodated within our project and that it's ADA accessible. So this means, having sidewalks on our roadways where we currently don't have it. It means having crosswalks, the ADA accessible crosswalks that are well lit. Bicyclists, we want to ensure that we either have bike lanes, protected bike lanes, wide enough shoulders for people to bike on those shoulders if there is no bike lane available, space for a bike lane. And for public transit users, we are going to be moving forward with a bus stop enhancement program, working really closely with the various COGs across the state on this to try and figure out how we can do a regional approach, partnering with municipalities to deploy bus infrastructure that the state will be paying for to install to make it a safer, more secure, well-lit, more comfortable transit experience for people using the bus system in our state. Part of the other priorities we're working on beyond safety, it lends into accessibility. So one of those things is continuing to invest in our public transportation infrastructure. One of Governor Lamont's top initiatives is called Time for CT. It's an acronym for track improvements for mobility enhancements. Really, it means upgrading our railroads in Connecticut. We have some of the oldest railroads in the nation, and we have a lot of work we need to do to bring them up to speed, literally, with where we know people want to be traveling to and from in our state. It's not just the New Haven line. It's also the Hartford line, which has proven to be a resounding success. That opportunity to connect the Hartford region, the greater Hartford region, to Boston is really the holy grail for us at CONDOT. We're excited by what Massachusetts is doing with their efforts to rebuild the tracks between Springfield and Worcester. That's something we're very excited to take advantage of. On the screen there, you see a rendering of the new station that is currently in design for Enfield, one of those missing links in the Hartford line that we're excited to move forward with both state and federal funds. What Time for CT is focused on, I mentioned the Hartford line, but it's, the big vision is cut off 25 minutes between New Haven and New York by the year 2035, investing in new infrastructure. So both improving the track infrastructure, improving a lot of the stations but also improving the rolling stock. So if you look at what we have on the Hartford line today, we're using old equipment. We inked a deal to purchase new rail cars for the Hartford line. Those should be arriving by late 2026 and put into service. That image there is a rendering of one of those new rail cars that will be operating on the Hartford line. And we want to, as we have the Hartford line service Enfield station, the new Windsor Lock station, which is under construction, that will enable greater connections between the Hartford line and Bradley Airport. So buses can meet every single train that arrives at the station in Windsor Locks in Windsor and shuttle people directly to the terminals at Bradley. We also want to continue to partner with municipalities over the next several years. One of the things that, I recognize is that all of what we want to achieve cannot be accomplished without the partnership with our COGS or Metropolitan Planning Organizations term at the federal level, as well as each individual municipal CEO, because our employees live and work in your communities, and your infrastructure is our infrastructure. Our infrastructure is in your infrastructure. We're all partners in this together. So what we did here late last year was we reconfigured and created some new offices here at Conduit. We've had a very successful legislative affairs office here at Connecticut DOT for many years. Pam Saccato and Patty Stewart led our legislative team and acted as constituent services for legislators. So what we've done is we restructured and created a new intergovernmental affairs unit here at Conduit. Pam Saccato was promoted to go lead that unit. And there's a whole team under Kevin Tedesco. We'll be in the next month or two sending out a notice to all municipal CEOs and public works directors and COG directors about how who's going to be assigned each region. We'll be your one-stop shop for if you have DOT needs, if you have thoughts on projects. You can still contact your local DOT garage, your general supervisor, or your crew leaders that you know that work in your and operate in your community. But as you, as the municipal official, if you need to reach out and have needs, we're going to have this intergovernmental affairs unit available for you. Anytime you need help, we're also going to continue to Grayson Wright. I think many of you know he is the contact for CROG. He's going to continue that role and have a higher visibility in the meetings with you all to make sure to be able to answer questions and bring stuff back to us here at headquarters. We have some new grant programs and continuation of existing grant programs. So Community Connectivity Grant Program will be in doing the announcements for the next round of awards in the next several weeks. We also have the new TRIP program, which is focused on rural infrastructure improvements. And we also have the new bus stop enhancement program, which I previously mentioned. So all of those are going to be rolling forward. And we're also going to continue to partner with you all through the LOTSIP program. As we continue to work with the legislature on other needs that come up, especially partnering with you, as you're looking at competitive grants that you want to pursue, we want to make sure to be able to be a consultative partner for you. If you have thoughts about, hey, I want to apply for this competitive grant on a state roadway to improve safety or improve infrastructure, give us a call. We're happy to partner with you and talk through what's possible there. Because we've gone through those federal grant opportunities in the past. We're happy to be a sounding board as you look at that. Talked about all of these already, but we're really excited to see the projects that we've invested in through the Community Connectivity Grant Program. We're having the ribbon cuttings now, we're having more groundbreakings. It's great to see that steam engine moving and more projects getting done, because we know those types of smaller projects, they're very high visible. The community members really love them. They improve quality of life in your community. So we're excited to continue to invest in that moving forward. Some of the big things that are on the horizon, obviously, is the Greater Hartford Mobility Study. This image here is the existing infrastructure in the Hartford, East Hartford region. I know later on the agenda, you're going to hear from my colleagues who are going to talk about what we just released and where we're going over the next few years to advance these concepts into the environmental and the design phase. So I'm excited to continue to work with CROG and all of you as we continue down this path of expanding and developing and delivering on the Greater Hartford Mobility Study, which is really looking at the future of Hartford, the Hartford region, for the next 30, 50, 70 years. So as we move forward with that, I know Kevin and Neil are going to talk about this, but you know, one of the things that we're going to continue to do is there's going to be extensive public engagement phase that we're going to be entering into. Lots of public meetings, go into communities that invite us in or businesses that want to talk to us to talk about the concepts that have been brought forward, you know, adhering to all the federal National Environmental Policy Act and the Connecticut Environmental Policy Act provisions that we need to do to ensure that what we will be doing benefits all residents of the community in which this infrastructure is going to be built. And it's not just focused just on Hartford and East Hartford. We're looking at what can we do in the surrounding communities as well. A lot of focus on local road improvements, focus on transit improvements, as well as on both the bus and the rail side, but also connectivity in the region. I know CROG has been doing a lot of work on the trails. How do you connect the East Coast Greenway? Things like that that we want to continue to partner with all of you on. It's going to be a long process. You know, this was not built overnight. We've had a couple hundred years of infrastructure built up here in the Hartford region. And so it's going to be a couple decades to get to where we want to be. But we want to do it right because we what we do now is going to be what's here for the next 50, 60, 70 plus years. So we've got one shot to do it right, and we want to do it right this time. So with that, yeah, I could talk about a lot of other things we're doing, but you know, I want to make sure to save time for questions. I know you have a very packed agenda. So with that, I'll stop sharing my screen and happy to answer any questions that any of the members have.
Does anybody have any questions?
Lori, I see one from Ryan. Ryan Aylesworth in Mansfield.
Thanks, Matt. And thanks, Commissioner. A lot of helpful, useful information to digest there. Not to pose a question that's really just inherently of interest to one town, i.e. Mansfield, but I guess I'm going to kind of do that. But maybe this will be relevant to other towns as well. So we're very interested and have been pursuing for some time now funding for a multi-use trail, a 10-foot wide corridor that basically would parallel a section of 195 and help connect our downtown and the UConn campus with an area we call the Four Corners, which is really sort of exploding with new growth, high density development now. And even before all that new growth is fully realized, there's already a lot of college age kids that walk that road, which is highly unsafe. That section 195, they're like basically hugging the shoulder while cars are coming and going. So thus far, we haven't been able to secure, we've been pursuing funding through federal infrastructure funds earmarks with our senators and Congressman Courtney, just haven't quite gotten over the hurdle yet. So my question for you is, and I'm sure if I had my DPW director sitting next to me, he'd be able to answer this for me, but I guess I'm curious. So aside from widening roads to accommodate bike or pedestrian lanes that are contiguous with the road, with a state road in this case, are there situations where the state, i.e. DOT, would actually make it its own project to install a multi-use trail that parallels a state road in your right-of-way? Or is that always going to have to be a local project and we would just be looking for state and federal funds and I suppose DOT support to facilitate that?
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, we would not be the ones to, you know, build, maintain, own, operate that multi-use trail. If, you know, in the past, what we've done across the state is partner with municipalities or multiple municipalities to through the COG to, you know, design it, and then we can often do a project to build it as long as there's a maintenance agreement where it's handed off to the municipality to maintain in the future. I think there's examples of that throughout the state. I think, you know, Farming Canal Heritage Trail is a good example of, you know, that was bubbled up from locals, but, you know, it's state project numbers tied to that. So through the LOTSIP program or through others, there definitely are funds available to do that. DEEP has their Rec Trails program, smaller dollar values. That may be a place to start. Have you designed it yet, or have you had any funding?
We have a budget. Of course, that budget, you know, we have to adjust that budget every year with inflation, you know, inflationary pressures. And right now, actually, we're giving a serious look to potentially broadening the scope of the project to not just be this 1 mile section of trail that I'm referring to, but actually thinking about a pair of roundabouts at this terminal intersection, which is just a not so good intersection right now. So we're actually thinking bigger. So I guess it's just helpful for me to understand better. I don't want to tie up the whole group here. We can certainly have additional conversations after this, but just understanding kind of what the side rails are in terms of when a project would actually be sort of owned by, even if, like you're saying, it's turned over to the town at the end of it for maintenance, but what the sort of parameters are where it actually would be a DOT project, like the ownership of the project, versus a town project with state and federal funding that, you know, the DOT supports. In my mind, there's a big difference between something we're competitively pursuing versus, oh, this is becoming a DOT project, and, you know, we will have input in that, but it's really a state project. So
we recognize that, you know, I'm not saying this is the case in Mansfield, but in many communities, they may not have the capacity to you know, build or project manage a lot of the infrastructure projects they may want to do. So, you know, that's where things, we have programs like LOTSIP, where we can partner with you all, you know, but also I think usually in these types of situations, the best thing to do is like reach out to us. I don't know if you've met with our staff already on this, but set up a meeting with our intergovernmental affairs unit. They'll bring in our local roads unit. They'll bring in our active transportation unit, our engineering administrator, and talk through options, you know, getting to know where you are in the design process or the preliminary planning. That's where we can troubleshoot the needs for your municipality. Because, you know, frankly, a lot of people who work in this building went to UConn. So I'm sure there's a lot of interest in that.
Well, and the other thing, I'll stop it with this, but the other thing we're thinking is that, you know, UConn, the student body is comprised of folks from basically every municipality in Connecticut. So if DOT really wants to promote roundabouts and adoption of roundabouts statewide, what better place to do that than where, you know, you have representatives from all 169 towns living and working. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely reach out. We'll set up a meeting.
Anybody else have any questions?
Lori, can I just make a brief comment?
Sure.
Commissioner Matt Reed from the town of Ellington, just a brief comment. I just want to, we had a situation here with a bridge that's a state project that's being installed here in town. And I sent a message to a number of people, but it included your office. And I think within 2 hours, I had a call back from an engineer and have had subsequent conversations as a result of that message. So I just want to say thank you for your responsiveness and willingness to make sure the right people were involved so we can try to resolve this. So thank you very much.
Yep. As soon as Pam and I saw that letter, we immediately had the chief engineer and his team get on it and start meeting. And we wanted to make sure that you knew we saw it. So,
excellent. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Yes, thank you. Anybody else?
Lori, this is Matt. I just wanted to thank the commissioner for his presentation. I did have an opportunity earlier this year to present on Vision Zero to a national audience, and really was pleased to learn that Connecticut's a leader in that discipline, I think in large part to the DOT's efforts and to your work, Commissioner. And you know, we're looking forward to continuing our good work relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much. Without you all. So
thank you so much, Commissioner. Moving on to number five, legislative updates.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lori. I apologize. We've got two other important presentations today.
Okay.
The next one, and folks, if you could budget until 1:30, if you have that time, that would be great for the larger meeting. But really pleased to be able to receive a presentation on the status of the Greater Hartford Mobility Study, as the commissioner had stated. And commissioner, I'm not sure if you wanted to make an introduction to the staff. If not, we're happy to turn things over to Kevin Burnham.
I can go ahead and get started again. My name is Neil Patel. I'm with the Department of Transportation Major Highways Unit. We're in charge of the Greater Hartford Mobility Study. With me today, we have Kevin Burnham, project manager, and also Casey Harden from AECOM. So yeah, real quick, we understand you got a tight time frame, so we'll try to get through this fairly quickly. We've kind of condensed some of our stakeholder rollout presentations that we have been doing, so we are excited to present these recommendations. We want to start off with what our vision statement is and our goals. And as you can see here, again, it's to improve mobility with a comprehensive look on like a transportation system, a multimodal transportation system, focused on quality of life, enhancing quality of life, economic vitality, and opportunity in the region. And these goals that you see here and you'll see throughout this presentation support that vision. Go to the next slide here. So, you know, the team has been working to wrap up the study. We did just release the press release, and we are wrapping up the report, which will be published in November. So we're working towards the end of the Pell study. And as the commissioner mentioned, we want to move into those next phases. So again, some of you may have seen this previously when we've met with a lot of municipalities last year, and even earlier this year, we've been working with Prague. And so, you know, we come up with over 120 alternatives. And those alternatives are, again, they're multimodal. They involve capital improvements, some service improvements, operations, and even some policy recommendations. We took those alternatives after a fatal flaw screening through a more detailed screening process shown here, with, again, at the core, it's about mobility. And as you go to your outer rings, you're talking about goals that kind of support that vision statement. So as we went through that screening process, those alternatives were placed in different categories, right? Depending on the size. And what we're going to see today, we'll do a quick overview of the long-term projects, but just know that we do have a lot of those near-term early action ones that we can get to within you know, the next few years to really provide some benefit. Then you've got some of these other projects that involve midterm, a little bit longer-term timeframe. And again, recognizing that all of these that are coming out of the study have to go through NEPA, some of them a lot quicker. Can be done on a lot quicker time frame, and some of them, as you'll see, are in a longer time frame. And I think I'm going to have Casey go through some of those long term components.
Thanks, Neil. Good afternoon, everyone. So I'll go through a quick summary, and some of you again may have seen some of these materials that were posted to our website last Friday, and that are going to be the subject of some kind of follow on public outreach. So I'll go through a few of these slides, and then we have a quick summary of what some of those early action projects are, and can touch on next steps moving forward. So in terms of our long-term kind of major study components, the crux of that kind of coalesces around what we've termed the study core, which is in Hartford and East Hartford. And that's where, in particular, the highway system really generates a lot of the regional congestion and delay we see, and really inhibits regional mobility. And the way we see it, you know, that infrastructure is divided into kind of four primary need areas. In the western part of Hartford, and just to orient everyone, we're kind of looking obliquely down towards Hartford and East Hartford, kind of with Northwest being straight up, where 91 is this north-south road for reference. But again, starting in the kind of western part of the city, the commissioner had mentioned all this kind of older infrastructure that was built with the rail line in the early 1900s, with some of the grade separation through there, and then I-84 following in the 1960s. These structures have reached their service lives, Their antiquated design offers some operational challenges. And again, through here, the rail and highway are intertwined with these two crossings. And so for a long time, we've understood that the solution to that was likely intertwined. And so that's sort of the first part of our network of four main challenges we're trying to solve. Highlighted in the gold, really defined by the 8491 interchange. So this is sort of the defining traffic characteristic or traffic influencer of the region. It wasn't originally designed to serve the purpose it does today, connecting 84 and 91. And as a result, there's a series of ramps that have limited geometry that inhibit their ability to process the high traffic demand. And then each of the two freeways bottlenecks. They go from three through lanes to two through lanes passing through the interchange. And that really creates a lot of the congestion that we experience on a daily basis today. Over in East Hartford, we've highlighted in light green the I-84 Route 2 or Mixmaster interchange, it's sometimes called. That has a combination of serving as a major, what we call system interchange between freeways, and also mixing in a lot of local access. And as a result, the interchange takes up a lot of space and doesn't operate as well as it could, and creates a really negative influence on some of the surrounding areas in East Hartford. And then finally, on the Connecticut River side or on the Hartford side of the Connecticut River, we've identified some barriers that I-91 creates between Hartford and the city. There's a limited amount of cross-river connectivity provided by today's roadway system. And then the Whitehead Highway itself contributes as a north-south barrier between downtown and neighborhoods to the south. And so to address all these, we've come up with a long-term recommendation plan that's summarized as kind of these four main components, where in CityLink West, the recommendation is to separate I-84 and the railroad's horizontal alignments so that they can both be lowered to facilitate better connections across those corridors and to reconstruct them and address the current deficiencies they have. We would recommend continuing I-84 to the north as CityLink East, creating a new system interchange with I-91 further to the north in the North Meadows, and then have that I-84 alignment cross the Connecticut River and realign itself in East Hartford over towards Main Street. We recommend cleaning up the Route 2 I-84 interchange, reducing the amount of local access, and reconstructing Route 2 so that it has a better transition between its limited access freeway character headed down towards Glastonbury and where it terminates right in downtown across the Founders Bridge. And then the final piece of the puzzle is termed River Gateway, which looks at lowering and capping I-91 along the riverfront, providing a new connection between Hartford and East Hartford over the Connecticut River. That'd be a new road with strong bicycle and pedestrian features, more of an urban boulevard than an arterial or a freeway. And also connecting back through the Whitehead Highway to the Pulaski Circle to make that more of a urban friendly corridor as opposed to the kind of real driver centric limited access freeway that it is today. When you turn on a little bit more detail, the plan starts to get a little bit more complex to follow. But, I think what I draw your attention to here are these blue arrows where we envision opportunities to better connect the community across these major freeway corridors, whether it be the lowered I-84 and 91 between Asylum Hill and downtown, or between North Hartford and downtown North, or the Connecticut River, where, again, I-91's long been that historic barrier. And instead of having the convention center looking out upon 12 lanes of I-91 and collector distributor roads, we're looking at an opportunity to bury that, cap it, and have better connections to the already strong work that's been done along the riverfront. Now, there's a lot of big ideas here. There's a lot of different ways the long-term plan is going to move forward. But then simultaneously, as we wrap up this Pell study this fall, there are opportunities to break out early action projects and midterm projects. I have a slide coming next that'll describe some of those early action projects and what they are. And then meanwhile, these longer term recommendations can move forward into the NEPA or SEPA phase, which is where we go through the Environmental Policy Act and we'll be creating probably environmental impact statements is the type of environmental document that'll lock in the recommendations with the respective discipline-based analysis of various environmental impacts. Following that, we go into design, rights of way, and we're hopefully targeting construction in the early 2030s for some of these major programs. But again, prior to that, we've identified a series of independent projects that can be moved forward. These are a few right in the downtown core area, focused on some intersection improvements, including the Trident, where Farmington and Asylum come together by Broad Street in Hartford, Pulaski Circle, the Albany and Main Trident in North Hartford, and East Hartford's Main Street. All intersections that are predominantly vehicle-centric today that we've identified improvements from a bicycle, from a pedestrian safety perspective, as well as improving vehicular operations. In addition to these, there are some programmatic elements. I heard the commissioner talk about improving connections to transit, and we've identified through the CT Fast Track and Hartford Line Corridor some different segments of bicycle and pedestrian improvements that could be added in the vicinity of those stations to better facilitate connections and create opportunities for TOD. And then along the transit system, we identified locations where there are sidewalk gaps adjacent to transit stops and key densities of employment and residential density, where those connections should be closed and kind of help facilitate better transit access to pedestrians. Just to wrap up, so you know, we have a couple of key elements coming up in terms of in-person meetings in Hartford and East Hartford on November 9th and November 16th. We are going to very aggressively market these. There's collateral that's just about to hit the streets in terms of through the normal channels that DOT pursues, as long as some of the local newspapers. And we've already reached out through the Hartford NRZs and are coordinating with our friends from the city that are on the call today to try to get the word spread. But we, you know, I think are interested in the assistance of this group as you have opportunities to, whether it's maybe a newsletter you do, we'd be happy to coordinate offline and through our friends at CROG to ensure that you've got maybe a fact sheet or a flyer or a brochure that potentially you could share, because we're interested in gaining input from the whole region. And ultimately, we expect to publish the report to our website by November 30th. And again, this is all, the interest here is starting to roll these recommendations out to continue to gather feedback. There have been many opportunities for both the general public and others to weigh in to this point, but we remain interested in kind of hearing their opinions in this interesting project. So I think we can pause there. And I don't know if there was intended to be another Q&A or... Happy to take some questions.
Anybody have any questions? If not, we'll move on to the last speaker.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Lori. And actually, we did, in the interest of time, we were able to reschedule advanced CT until next month. But I did want to thank Neil and Casey for the good presentation. I see Peter Souza has his hand raised. He has a question. And then I've got one for the team as well. So maybe we can take Peter next.
Thank you, Matt. Just a very high level question on the East Link. Whereabouts geographically is that conceptual going across compared to the JC's boathouse? Is that in that general vicinity or to the north or south of that?
In terms of the bridge crossing, the new bridge crossing? It's north of the boathouse, that crossing. It's up by the lagoon area. That's in that vicinity on the Hartford side.
Just south of the landfill?
Yes.
Right. Between the landfill and the railroad bridge, basically.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Peter. Lori, I see Rob Eloise. And then I've got a quick question as well.
Yeah. Thanks, Casey. Thanks for the presentation. I'm wondering, maybe you can brief the committee real quickly on the grant applications that are submitted by the DOT already regarding some of these projects.
Yeah, so we've got a mega grant application and for the one of the midterm projects, which is the Route 2 to I-91 direct connection. So that includes that new bridge over the Connecticut River. So essentially Route 2 would continue towards, call it north, even though it's an east-west, right? Call it north along, there we go, along that line to 91. And that would alleviate two of the ramps at the existing interchange. So that we applied for a mega grant. And so those components, Casey, correct me if I'm wrong, we applied for the planning on that mega grant there. So for the NEPA phase. And then the other one that we did apply for under reconnecting communities is on the River Gateway component. And that involves extension of Whitehead or Charter Oak, a new bridge, another new crossing across to East Hartford. Again, with that multimodal aspect, making sure we accommodate and kind of complement what's going on the East Hartford side. And again, that was a grant application for the planning phase.
Glad to see things are moving forward. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Rob. And Lori, I'll go next. Neil and Casey and team want to thank you for the informative presentation today. You know, as a staff, we're really excited about the potential of the project, both the long-term items as well as the early action items. We are going to want to be able to dig into things in more detail so that we can appropriately advise the policy board as the MPO, as you know. I don't know if you could comment on the anticipated NEPA schedule right now, or do we not have that?
Well, again, I think part of that schedule, we kept it very high level and general at this time because the different components are going to be under different NEPA phases, right? So you've got the EI, what we're looking at for an EIS for that Route 2 to I-91 direct connection. That's one component. The CityLink West and East, which is really the larger one, right? Involves 84, involves the rail line, involves the interchange. That's another EIS. So those are all we're planning to move forward as priorities into the NEPA phase.
Thank you, Neil. And I did see a question, Lori, come in from Eric Anderson from Andover. How does this vision affect the crossing for the East Coast Greenway as we look to bring the trail over from Hartford to East Hartford?
Casey, you want to take sure. that?
And get some more. Yeah, so we've been meeting with Rob and his team monthly throughout the duration of the process. So we've been, so while we had identified that gap in the East Coast Greenway as a need, we were well aware that Rob and co were planning to study that gap. And so, you know, we sort of left it to their study to identify the proper route. We looked, in addition to looking at closing that gap, had identified several good potential corridors for new, sort of the skeleton of if the East Coast Greenway is the spine, sort of the limbs of a more regional trail network that connect both down towards the partially constructed CT Fast Track Parallel Trail and elsewhere along the region. So we have a package of multi-use trail recommendations that we think are complementary to that gap in the East Coast Greenway being closed. But we've essentially left where that gap closure routing aligns to the CROG study that is ongoing.
Yeah, and we have, as mentioned, we have an existing study going on to close that gap through East Hartford, Hartford, and mainly Bloomfield. And there's heavy town involvement in all those routes. So right now we're dealing with the existing infrastructure. As you can see from this graphic, you know, things aren't going to be in place until, you know, at best case scenario into, you know, 10 years from now or so. So there'll be plenty of time to revisit that, where the actual signed route is, if there is a better option with a different bridge over the river, in the future or whatnot. But right now we're dealing with the existing infrastructure and identifying the best path with what we have now. And of course, you know, any new opportunities are going to have heavy town involvement regarding what if the route does move in the future. But there's certainly new opportunities that these new bridges bring, or even with the Buckley Bridge, the reconstitution of that from a freeway to a local boulevard, which would be a great opportunity.
Good. Well, thank you for that good question, Eric. And Lori, I don't know if there are any additional questions for Neil and Casey and team.
I don't see any. Do you, Matt?
No. So we can thank you very much for that really informative update. And policy board members, much more to come on the Greater Hartford Mobility Study in the future. Expect it will be on our agenda periodically. So, Lori, we can now move to number 5, a legislative update. I don't know that we have Kathy here with us today, but I do see Chris Smith.
Hello. Thank you, Matt. Good to see you. Good to see everybody here. Also joining me on the Zoom is John Harkins from our office. I don't know if you all know John Harkins, but he's been with us for quite a while and also shares a wealth of experience as a former chief elected official, as a former mayor of Stratford. So wanted to give a very brief update. I did push a 1 p.m. meeting back a little bit, so I want to kind of tick through this quickly and answer any questions you might have and run if you don't mind. I'll try to keep this to about 3 minutes. Quick 2024 session preview. For those of you who aren't as familiar, we are going into a short session. It's a midterm session. The budget activity is really focused around the second year of the biennial budget that was adopted last year. So what they're mainly charged with is tackling adjustments to the adopted budget for fiscal year 25 that begins on July 1 of 24 and continues until June 30 of 25. They'll be convening in the first week of February and adjourning in the first week of May. Because we're in the middle of a 2-year term, we do not anticipate any whole-scale committee membership changes. So on some of our key committees, transportation, appropriations, finance, planning and development, a couple of others, we expect that membership to be largely the same as it was for the previous legislative session earlier this year. One key difference in short sessions, individual legislators cannot submit legislation unless it is budget related. So we won't see the huge number of proposed bills that we normally do in odd sessions or long sessions. Most of those bills will come through raised concepts in committee, and with some limited exceptions of raised proposed bills if they're budget related from individual legislators. So in a short session, the timeline is compressed to do their committee work. The governor will be releasing his budget adjustment proposal on opening day, that first Wednesday in February, I believe it's the 7th. Budget hearings will commence that following week or the week after in all likelihood with the Appropriations Committee. Those extend for usually about 2 weeks. Late February, sometimes going into early March, but that will be a kind of a key time frame for budgetary advocacy, testimony, engagement with legislators on the budget adjustments that are proposed by the governor. So that compressed timeline also means that hearings, public hearings in the policy committees as well as the budget committees, they're all going to be centralized around, some hearings will start right away. So session will convene on the 7th of February. We might even have public hearings as soon as that following week. And those will continue through the committee deadlines, which the earliest committee deadlines are about mid-March. And the latest committee deadlines, which are the budget committees, are in early April, with the expectation that the session will end at the statutorily, or I should say constitutionally required end time, first week in May. As soon as session ends, election season will kick off for all of the legislative seats. All 187 seats, 151 House and 36 Senate, will be up for election next year. However, the statewide constitutional officers, governor, lieutenant governor, comptroller, et cetera, are not on the ballot next year since it is a presidential year. Quick update on the budget. At the beginning of this month, the comptroller issued the year-end report for the 2023 fiscal year that ended on June 30th. According to the comptroller, that ended with a $551 million surplus in the general fund and a positive fund balance in the special transportation fund of about $681.7 million. Again, that's for fiscal year 23, not the current fiscal year we are in. The rainy day fund ended the year at the statutory maximum of $3.3 billion. That rainy day fund is what is how it's commonly referred to, our budget reserve fund. And after the transfers and the audits, they're anticipating that fund to be at $4.21 billion at the end of fiscal year 24. The statutory 15% floor, that means that anything above that excess for the budget reserve fund does get transferred to the state employees retirement and the teachers retirement programs to reduce our long-term unfunded or inadequately funded liability. State Treasurer's Office did transfer the excess volatile revenue to the state employee retirement fund. That was about $1.05 billion and to the teachers retirement system of $272.8 million. Additional allocations are expected as the fiscal year 23 audit concludes. I'm not sure if that's concluded or not, or if it's going to be concluded soon. The OPM letter on the 20th gives a little bit of a preview on where they're anticipating the budget to fall. The fiscal year 24 budget is anticipated to have a general fund balance of just shy of $400 million at year end. They were currently... that's what it was projected when it was passed. Currently projecting a surplus of $212.1 million, which is $187.6 million below the budgeted amount and $72.4 million below last month's estimate. So it is trending a little bit downward there. That is the result of an increase in anticipated expenditure requirements within the DSS Medicaid account. OPM is forecasting an operating balance of about $203.9 million in the Special Transportation Fund, and they do not forecast a deviation from the adopted budget for the revenues on that, but that could change depending on where consensus revenue estimates end, which are expected, I believe, in the middle of next month. That is the state budget update. I ticked through that very quickly. I am happy to answer any questions you might have. And of course, John, I don't know if I missed anything, if you wanted to add anything, John, but if not, that should conclude our legislative update.
Well, Chris, I think you did a good job. Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Anybody have any questions for Chris? If not, we'll move on to number seven, approval of CROG Vision Zero Task Force. Charter.
Thank you, Lori. This is Matt. Wanted to thank Chris and John for their good legislative update. And Roger Cron on our staff is going to take the lead on this. Really excited about this agenda item. Roger.
All right. Thank you, Matt. The Transportation Committee had on this past Monday is recommending to the Policy Board for approval the formation of a CROG Vision Zero Task Force. And as on last page of the document. So why is a task force needed? CROG received a Safe Streets and Roads for All grant to supplement our current regional transportation safety plan, which was completed a few years ago, analyzed crash data in all of our towns and suggested strategies to reduce fatal crashes and serious injury crashes. And this grant will update that plan and put it in full compliance with the USDOT's outline of a safety action plan. And there's eight items, and this creating a Vision Zero Task Force would address two of them, the leadership commitment and the planning structure. So two important aspects are having a planning structure where a committee or task force or implementation group is formed that's required, that's responsible for oversight and implementation of the plan. And secondly, to set a leadership commitment and goal setting where either a target date would be set for achieving zero fatalities and serious injuries or a serious reduction in roadway fatalities and serious injuries. So the staff has suggested, and it was approved by the Transportation Committee, that we have a a Vision Zero Task Force charter. There's a just one page with seven items. I'll briefly just review those. One, the task force would advise the Transportation Committee and Policy Board. Two, recommendations of the task force would be initially submitted to the Transportation Committee. Three, they could make suggestions for agenda items to the transportation or other committees. Four, initially at a minimum, this task force would extend through a period through September 30th of 2026, which is the final end date of our grant. Number five, they'd be charged with oversight and implementation and monitoring of the safety action plan. And six, we'd be suggesting the task force be no more than 15 people. And seven, we have a list of different organizations where we would draw from to create the members of the task force. The actual members have not been submitted yet or chosen yet, but they'd come from town, city engineers and planners, police department, fire department, educators, vulnerable user organizations that represent the pedestrian and bicycle community, local traffic authorities, and some of our partners from CONDOT, Federal Highway, UConn T2 Center, and that those type of groups. So we are recommending that the Transportation Committee recommended approval.
Thank you, Roger. And Lori, I forgot to acknowledge John Coleman, who chairs the Transportation Committee. John, I'm not sure if there's anything additional you would want to add on this item or if you'd be willing to make the motion.
Thank you, Matt. No, only thing I would like to add is to thank you, your staff, and particularly Roger for his efforts on this, and reiterate that the Transportation Committee unanimously endorsed the Vision Zero Task Force and recommend the same to the Policy Board, and I would so move.
We need a second.
Yes.
Second, Peter Souza.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Moving on to approval of 2024 Executive Committee and Policy Board meeting dates. Matt.
Yes, thank you, Lori. Just quickly, this is more of a pro forma item. So we do need the Policy Board to adopt a schedule for next year for both the Executive Committee and the full board. And the schedule is pretty similar to what you've had in recent years with just a couple of exceptions. We have added an additional meeting of the Policy Board at the end of June because we were finding business got a little bit compressed over the summer. We are also planning on a hybrid meeting on a quarterly basis for the Policy Board. I would encourage you all to try to budget a little bit more time for those. And we'll certainly work to do that when we send out the meeting invites. The Executive Committee has endorsed both schedules. So a motion to approve would be in order.
Lori, John Coleman, I'd move approval of both meeting schedules.
Thank you, John. Do we have a second?
Second, so Peter Souza.
Okay, Peter, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item summary. Appointments and nominations committee, number nine.
Thank you, Lori. This is Matt. I've just been informed, unfortunately, that we lost our quorum. So we're not going to be able to take action on item number 10, our TIP amendments. John and Rob, I hope it's okay if those wait a month. But on item number nine, we do need a nominating committee to come up with a slate of officers for the Policy Board for the next term, for the 23-25 term. The nominating committee also will typically identify a proposed executive committee for next term as well. John Coleman has served as the chair of the nominating committee over the last several iterations. He's agreed to do so again. I think he has been struggling to recruit a few fellow members, and John, maybe you can try to recruit a few now.
I would. First, I'd like to thank Wendy for agreeing to join. She stepped up right away, and we appreciate that. And I'd would really like to get at least two more members. It's a small committee. We meet at most only twice. We meet soon after the elections are completed so that we know who the chief elected officials are and if there's any change in these. We know there's going to be some change in the officers on the present policy board because of retirements or moving on, but it's not an extensive committee, and it's and I would welcome a couple of more members, and one from the east side of the river and one from the west side. We try to get representation from both sides of the river and from small and large towns. So right now you have Bloomfield and Simsbury, so we could certainly use a larger community and maybe a rural community.
I'd jump on if you need me to.
Go ahead.
John, I'd jump on if you need me to.
Okay. You've been on before, Lori. We welcome that. But just I was trying to, it may not be possible to have, so we don't put you in an awkward position in terms of using existing officers on the committee, but you've been there before and you'd be a welcome addition.
And I see that Mayor Moran from Mansfield has her hand up too, Lori.
Super.
Yep. Sorry, Tony.
Tony, we'd welcome you.
All right. So sounds like we've got a few additional members there, John. That's great.
You're good, Matt. It'd be Wendy, myself, Lori, and Tony. I think we have, between us, we have a pretty good knowledge of the makeup, and I think we can make a fairly comprehensive and positive recommendation for the next
Excellent.
Meeting.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies.
Question for Rob Eloise. Rob, we've lost the quorum, so we can't vote on the TIP amendments. Can those wait until next month?
We are going to inform CONDOT right away, and hopefully there's not an issue. Usually at this time of year, there's not a big issue. Usually there's a bigger issue before the end of the federal year. So it is what it is. Well, they're going to have to, we'll inform them and they'll shift things around.
Okay. Well, if there is an emergency, we can call a special meeting of the executive committee to take action on the item, because the executive committee can act on behalf of the board.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Lori, it's Grayson from
DOT. Grayson from CONDOT. I did reach out to the state unit, and I will work with Rob to determine if the amendments can wait until next month. If not, then I'll be in touch with Rob to see if we can have a special meeting if possible. So I'll let you know, Rob.
Okay, yeah, let me know as soon as possible. Thanks.
Thank you, Grayson. Matt, thank you, Rob.
Do you want to move on to 11 correspondence or?
Yes, just informational, Lori, just letters of support for some really good grant applications here from the towns of Tallinn, Hartford, and Glastonbury. Also attached a copy of our monthly newsletter, The CROG Connection. Want to thank Aaliyah Miller for her great work on that. And if you haven't had a chance to review the connection, would encourage you to do so. We don't have any other business we can act on, Lori, and we can proceed to adjournment.
Okay, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Is there a second?
Second, Steve Jones.
Thank you, Steve. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion's passed. Have a nice day, and thank you.
Thank you all so much. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
Be well, all.